Hello, Dove, and everyone. It's wonderful to be here. We're here for Holy Spirit Guides, which is typically just a review of all of the personal messages that Holy Spirit gave me. And by personal, I mean not a part of NTI. You know, NTI, as I was writing that with Holy Spirit, I knew always that it was really for everyone, that it was not just for me. But as I've been growing up with the Holy Spirit, my spiritual growing up, and the Holy Spirit has given me many messages that were what I would call personal messages, yet I still shared them, and they're still helpful to others. But they were definitely messages that were just for me, and or maybe I should take out the just. They were messages that were intended for me in a more direct way. But because they're helpful to others, I share them as well. But before we get into my personal messages today, which is what we typically do during Holy Spirit Guides, we're actually going to look at a little bit of Helen's personal message in the Urtext. For her, it was kind of nice for me. My personal messages were separate from NTI. I didn't have to go through and separate them. I always knew when I was writing NTI and when, you know, Holy Spirit was talking directly to me. But for Helen, it seems it was all kind of run together, and that's why the Urtext needed to be edited to take out the personal messages and actually develop the course. But as you all know, the Urtext is available, so a lot of people read that. And someone emailed me this morning with a part of the Urtext and asked me to comment on it. It's a part of the Urtext where Jesus is talking to Helen about sex. And in fact, if anybody would like to read it for themselves, I've just given you the link that I was given this morning. I'm not an Urtext student, I should say that. I've never ever felt guided to read the Urtext. This is the second time I've been asked to comment on it. There was one other time that someone asked me to comment on it, and I went to the Holy Spirit and was given an answer. And so this is the second time. And so I have read it. And what I'm going to do is ask Holy Spirit to guide me as I comment on it. Yeah, I see Cheryl's asking, what is the Urtext? She's saying, what is that? Yeah, and David is answering her. It's the original text as Helen wrote it down. One thing I can tell you as I read this as a scribe is that it was very clear to me that this isn't a part of the course. Or at least, there are some things mixed in here that are a part of the course, but it was very clear to me that this really was, a discussion between Jesus and Helen, and not intended to be a part of the course. It's very easy to tell that by reading that. But since it is here, and people do read it, and sex is a very interesting topic. For some reason, we're all very interested in sex. I think that it'll be good to go ahead and go over this and ask for the Holy Spirit to help us to get clarity on the topic of sex. So I've kind of chattered a little bit here, giving you all the opportunity to open this link yourself. What I'm going to do is just start reading, and I'll be skipping around a little bit because the conversation actually skips around a little bit, and I want to try and remain as consistent as possible on the topic. So what I'm going to do is start with the second paragraph, which begins with, "Remember the story about the artist." Prior to that, Helen is talking to Jesus about some people she knows, and Jesus is responding to that. But I don't think we need to get into that. We'll start with the story about the artist. So let me read this to you. "Remember the story about the artist who kept devoting himself to inventing better and better ways of sharpening pencils. He never created anything, but he had the sharpest pencil in town." The language here is intentional, Jesus is saying. "Sex is often utilized on behalf of very similar errors." And of course, you know, we just read that this artist never created anything, but he had the sharpest pencil in town. And I think that really the never created anything is probably an important part of what Jesus is trying to talk about. That's the language that is intentional. Some people may believe it was the sharpest pencil in town part of the sentence, but I'm feeling that it was that he never created anything, and that sex can be the same, that sex as a tool can be used in a way that it never creates anything. And in fact, if we go right on to the next sentence, we'll get a lot of clarity about this. He says, sex is often utilized on behalf of very similar errors. And then listen to what he begins to list. Hostility, triumph, vengeance, self-debasement, and all sort of expressions of the lack of love are often very clearly seen in the accompanying fantasies. So he's really, you know, in talking about the average couple, as we know, some of these things actually happen in form as well. But when we talk about the average couple, the form of what appears to be happening in sex can look loving. It can appear to be loving. But really what can be going on within the minds of each partner, and maybe this is shared, maybe this is not shared between the two, but what can be going on within the mind of each partner while they are having sex in order to really heighten the sexual enjoyment is a fantasy. And you know, I'm sure that we are all aware of this. And what Jesus is pointing out is some very common elements that are going on within the mind as we are having sex. Even though we may not be acting them out in form, these fantasies may well be in the mind. And again, he mentions hostility, triumph, vengeance, self-debasement, just to name a few. And he's saying that these are often very clearly seen in the accompanying fantasies. He continues, he says, but it is very profound error to imagine that because these fantasies are so frequent or occur so reliably, that this implies validity. Remember that while validity implies reliability, the relationship is not reversible. You can be wholly reliable and be entirely wrong. So if we go back again to the first part of the paragraph where Jesus is talking about the pencil artist, you know, who kept creating or kept inventing better and better ways of sharpening pencils, you know, Jesus says he never created anything. And if we think about what the word creation really means, we know that creation and love are completely synonymous. And anything that is not love, at best, could be called miscreation. But creation and love are completely synonymous. And we can see by how Jesus is describing what actually occurs within the mind during sex, we can see how there is no creation going on there. We can see how there is no love going on there. It may appear to be love on an outward level, and if we never share the fantasies, you know, with our partner, you know, they may completely believe that, you know, what we are doing is an act of love. But depending on the fantasies in the mind, there's a very good chance, Jesus is saying, that there is no love here, that there is no creation going on here. And we could be completely reliable in that. You know, we could have those repetitive fantasies every time that we have sex. We can be completely reliable in that. But that, you know, doesn't make it, as Jesus is saying, valid, or what we might call it. That doesn't make it, of course, right-mindedness. We know it isn't right-mindedness. And in fact, on down a couple of paragraphs, Jesus says, intellect may be a displacement upward, but sex can be a displacement outward. I'm going to continue on to the next paragraph. This really skips around, but I think by the time we get done, I think the jumbled discussion will kind of pull together. But if it seems a bit jumbled right now, that's because that's the way the discussion occurred. It was written down in kind of a jumbled fashion. But if we continue on, Jesus says, the confusion of miracle impulse with sexual impulse is a major source of perceptual distortion because it induces, rather than straightening out, the basic level confusion which underlies all those who seek happiness with the instruments of the world. And I just want to stop right there for a moment because, you know, really a miracle impulse is an impulse that teaches us who we are. When we follow up on a miracle impulse, what we learn from that is what we are, or at least we come a step closer to learning what we are. What we are could be described in a number of different ways, but we are the mind of God. We are love. We are co-creators with God. We are the Son of God. We are love. You know, and I could just continue and continue and continue. Miracle impulses, when we follow up on them, they teach this to us. That's what miracle impulses do. They teach us, through the shift in our mind, what we are. And as we learn what we are, we learn that our happiness is within, or that our happiness comes from us, or that our happiness comes from knowing who we are, or that our happiness comes only from doing God's will. Again, it can be worded many, many times. Really, the experience and the knowing is beyond words, which is why there's so many ways to describe it. But the opposite of that, it would be that we need something else to make us happy. That's, you know, we don't learn that. We're not learning that we need something outside of us to make us happy. We're learning that our happiness just is, and we merely need to accept it. That's what the miracle impulse teaches us. And so what Jesus is saying in this last sentence is that a miracle impulse is confused with a sexual impulse, you know, because both are, you know, a wanting to get love, you could call it, I guess, or a wanting to get satisfaction, or a wanting to get happiness. Okay, those are all words you could use. But the miracle impulse teaches us the truth about what that is. And the sexual impulse deceives us, because the sexual impulse followed up on teaches us that we get all of that from outside of us. And really, sex is only one example. I mean, you know, we could just as easily be talking about food here. Just as easily, because we actually use food in the same way we use sex. I may not have the same fantasies, but we use food in the same way, which is why overeating is such a huge problem in America. We believe we can get satisfaction from the food. We believe we can get happiness from the food. We believe the food is going to make us feel better. There's even a type of euphoria with some types of food, which of course is very temporary, but you know, so is the euphoria from sex. So we can really see that this is not even about sex, although sex is the discussion. This is about looking in the wrong place, looking outside of us for happiness, love, fulfillment, satisfaction. And when we do that, we are teaching ourselves the opposite of what a miracle impulse teaches us. So we're really not teaching us what we are. We are teaching us what we are not. Now, I'm going to continue in just a moment, but I notice Christian has her hand up, so I'm going to take Christian's question. Christian, please go ahead. She just wanted to make a funny comment. I bought Cheshire cheese today, she says. It has no taste. You can tell it's nothing. Literally nothing. So she was not fooled by the cheese. Thank you, Christian. All right, so again, let me reread this last sentence, and then I'm going to continue, mainly because Jesus comes back to what he says next. So he says, the confusion of miracle impulse with sexual impulse is a major source, and major because so many of us, if not all of us, fall for this, is a major source of perceptual distortion because it induces, rather than straightening out, the basic level confusion which underlies all those who seek happiness with the instruments of the world. He says, a desert is a desert is a desert. So we could say Cheshire cheese is Cheshire cheese is Cheshire cheese. He just happened to use the symbol of desert. But he says a desert is a desert is a desert. You can do anything you want in it, but you cannot change it from what it is. It still lacks water, which is why it is a desert. So really, you know, as long as we are seeking satisfaction, love, happiness, fulfillment outside of us in anything, it doesn't matter whether that's sex, whether that's food, whether that's our job, whether that is some kind of recreational activity, it really is irrelevant. As long as we're seeking that outside of us, we are going to continue to misteach ourselves. And because nothing outside of us can provide us with that which we are truly seeking, we may have those highs, like when we win the sports game. We may feel really, really good, but the day is going to come along when we're going to lose the sports game and we're going to feel really, really bad. You know, nothing outside of us can satisfy us, and that's the way it's always going to be. And that's really kind of what Jesus is saying. And he says, the thing to do, the last sentence in that paragraph, he says, the thing to do with a desert is to leave. And I don't really interpret this as meaning, you know, don't have sex. I think that this is the way some people interpret it. I think they almost interpret Jesus in the Ur text as saying, you know, sex is wrong except in the case of procreation. And as we read on, we'll see more about why they get that. Sex is wrong except in the case of procreation. Then you can have sex. But Jesus never teaches us to judge. Jesus never, ever teaches us to judge. Period. There is no exception to that statement. Jesus is teaching us to let go of judgment. And so if we're reading something and we think that Jesus is teaching us to judge, like if we think that Jesus is teaching us that, you know, sex is wrong except in the case of procreation, then we have to be misunderstanding Jesus. And if we recognize that we're misunderstanding Jesus, what we can do is ask for another type of understanding. So we can really trust that Jesus is never going to teach us to judge. So when Jesus is saying the thing to do with a desert is to leave, he's not really talking about form here. He's talking again about mind, which is what he always talks about. What he's saying is if you're seeking pleasure outside of you or happiness or fulfillment, you need to stop doing that. You need to realize that's where you're not finding it. So he's not talking about you need to stop having the sex necessarily, or you need to stop going to the sporting event. He's certainly not telling you to stop eating. But he is saying that you need to start to correct that misperception that you're going to find that happiness, that satisfaction, that fulfillment outside of you, because that is a misperception, and you are teaching yourself that you are what you are not. That's what he means by the thing to do with a desert is to leave. Really what he's doing is encouraging us to accept the atonement for ourselves, or to accept the correction in the mind to the belief that we will find happiness, satisfaction, fulfillment outside of us. Now he continues on, you know, with a little bit of dictation on the course. I'm going to skip by that for right now. I might come back to part of it, but I'm going to skip by that for right now. But he dictates Miracle Principle 38, Miracle Principle 39, Miracle Principle 40. And then he comes back and says, I want to finish the instructions about sex, because this is an area the miracle worker must understand. Inappropriate sex drives or misdirected miracle impulses result in guilt if expressed. And I'm going to stop there for a moment, because especially since it says in parentheses, or misdirected miracle impulses, it really means that any one of us that seems to have a concern, an issue, a problem, and that problem is not sex, it's something else, it's food, for example, or, you know, it is, you know, our career or our children's success, you know, anything else outside of us that we're hoping will fulfill us or make us happy. We could literally, in this conversation, put that in the sentence. So instead of inappropriate sex drives, we could say, overeating, or we could say, expecting our children to make us look good, or anything else could go in that sentence. Anything that seems to be our misuse of the miracle impulse. So inappropriate sex drives or misdirected miracle impulses result in guilt if expressed and depression if denied. Now, of course, he says it results in guilt if expressed. And a lot of people might say, well, I have sex. I have these sexual fantasies. I do receive pleasure from my partner, and I do not feel guilty. And they may believe that. But at the same time, if they're watching TV and they see, someone on TV that is considered a sexual criminal, they may see that person as very, very guilty. We know that this is the projection of our guilt. So as long as you look out there and see, anybody else as guilty, then there is guilt within you, or you couldn't possibly look out there and see them as guilty. So this doesn't necessarily mean that the guilt will be conscious. For some people it may be. They may feel guilty after sex. For other people it may not be conscious, but yet, they're perfectly willing to see others as guilty, especially in the area of sex. Same thing with food. You may think you don't feel guilty after you eat. Of course, most people admit with food that they do. But you may see someone that you perceive as an overeater and judge them. So again, the guilt may be felt or the guilt may be projected. But he is saying that if you do express this, you will experience guilt. Yes, Christian, please take the mic. Christian is asking, what does he mean, inappropriate sexual impulses? Or he actually says inappropriate sex drive. But again, that inappropriate, in this case, would really mean looking outside of yourself for your own fulfillment, your own happiness, your own satisfaction. And for the average person in the world, now we're all course students and we're learning the correction to this, but for the average person in the world, they've never ever considered a correction to this. To them, that is what sex is. You have sex with someone else in order to get satisfied, to get fulfilled, to have fun, whatever. And that's, Jesus is saying that's inappropriate, not because he's judging it as wrong, because Jesus doesn't judge anything as wrong, but he's saying it's inappropriate because it's teaching us inappropriately. We're teaching ourselves that we are what we are not instead of teaching ourselves what we are. So that's where the word inappropriate comes from. It's not a judgment word. It's just that it's teaching ourselves wrongly. Yeah, and Christian's saying, yeah, he's right. It's nowhere near as satisfying as the miracle. So that's what he means by inappropriate. We are, trying to use sex to satisfy ourselves or to fulfill ourselves or to find happiness or to find love, any of those situations of work. And so it's inappropriate because we're teaching ourselves wrongly regarding what we are. But it's not a sin. We're not getting into sin talk here. All right, so let's go back to this. Inappropriate sex drives or misdirected miracle impulses result in guilt if expressed and depression if denied. Now, it's interesting because, I do talk to people, I think you all know, and sex does come up in these discussions. And I do talk to people who, typically based on the urtext, to be honest, based on what we're reading right now, come to an intellectual conclusion that something is wrong with wanting sex. And so what they do, because they've come to an intellectual conclusion that something is wrong about wanting sex, and yet they continue to really, really want it, what they do is they then judge themselves. And they're finding themselves more and more guilty, more and more unworthy. They're repressing their desire to have sex and then judging themselves for wanting to have sex. And as you can see, that's just a downward spiral that doesn't serve any purpose. Well, I believe somewhere in the Bible, although I can't quote where, but I believe somewhere in the Bible, Jesus does make a comment that, you know, to not get married is best. And by that, you know, in that day and time, he's really talking about to not have sex, to be abstinent is best. But, he says, you know, something like, you know, these aren't his words, I can't quote, you guys, I'm just going with the content here, so totally ignore the words. But something like, if you really, really want it, and there's a fire in you, and that's all you can think about, well, then go ahead and get married. Or basically, well, go ahead and have sex. And I think that for a lot of people, you know, as we're growing up spiritually, there may be a phase that we go through where we need to let the guilt that we feel about sex go and have the sex anyway. You know, sometimes I tell people when they call and they really, really want sex, but they feel that it's wrong, but yet sex is all they can think about. I say, well, you know, if sex is all you can think about, instead of, you know, trying to deny that, repress that, you know, judging yourself for it, why don't you find a willing partner and have sex? If that's all you can think about, then have sex. And, you know, and what else would Jesus tell the Son of God? I mean, if that's all you want, if that's really the top of your desires right now is to have sex, well, then find a willing partner and have sex. You know, we would never tell the Son of God not to do what he thinks he wants to do. And so, you know, if we try to deny that we want to have sex then when we do, and we try to, you know, say that it's wrong, and we hold ourselves back from sex when sex is really what we want, that's not helpful. So one phase in this process may be having sex. And then we may also need to be having sex while letting go of this guilt. Because Jesus is saying that if you express this desire, not the desire to have sex in itself, but the desire to be satisfied by something outside of you, and sex is one way that we satisfy this desire, well, what's going to happen is guilt is going to start coming up. So when you move from repression into having sex, then guilt may well come up in your mind. And as a course student, you probably will be conscious of it. You probably will, because you've opened yourself up to allowing these things to come into your consciousness so that you can let them go. So as you go through this phase of having sex and then noticing your guilt for it, a really great way to have sex is to have sex and use it to let go of guilt. So, and no, I would not differentiate between sex with a partner or masturbation in this case. I really wouldn't. I think it's all the same. So you could be, you know, using masturbation because you really have this strong drive, noticing guilt about it, and using it to let it go. So you may go through a phase in your spiritual development where you're having a lot of sex, recognizing a lot of guilt, and focusing on letting it go, and kind of learning to have guilt-free sex. That may be a part of your spiritual growing up. Now, let me go ahead and just continue. There's a lot to say here, but for now, let me just continue, and we'll come back to this. So again, inappropriate sex drives or misdirected miracle impulses result in guilt if expressed and depression if denied. We said before that all real pleasure comes from doing God's will. Whenever it is not done, an experience of lack results. This is because not doing the will of God is a lack of self. And again, Jesus is not teaching judgment. Jesus never teaches judgment. But what he's helping the mind to see is that happiness comes from the other direction. Happiness does not come from looking outside. Happiness comes from looking within and finding our own guidance. And that's really all he's trying to do. He's just trying to teach the mind to look in the right direction. He is not in any way teaching judgment. If we continue, sex was intended as an instrument for physical creation to enable souls to embark on new chapters in their experience and thus improve their record. Now, this looks like a statement, and again, I think it's sometimes interpreted as a statement that the only reason to really have sex is to have babies. I don't really see that in this sentence at all. What I see in this sentence is the same thing I see when the Holy Spirit says, forgiveness is all the world is for. In other words, you know, we're talking about sex here, so Jesus is talking about sex, but what he's really saying is sex is no different than anything else. The real purpose of sex is to help you to heal your mind. The real purpose of food is to help you to heal your mind. The real purpose of your job is to help you to heal your mind. The real purpose of everything in the world is to help us to heal our mind. And I think that one reason that we read this sex thing different is A, because it's focused on sex, but B, because we do somehow separate sex out in our minds. We separate sex out as different than food and different than our job and different than the sporting event. It has a special little aura around it. And so, you know, he's talking about sex was intended as an instrument for physical creation. That's the first part of the sentence only. Okay, so to stop there and say that's the purpose of sex would be not to read the whole sentence. He says sex was intended as an instrument for physical creation to enable souls to embark on new chapters in their experience and thus improve their record. In other words, he's saying the purpose of sex is the same as the purpose of everything within the world. It's to help you to heal your mind. And that's the only purpose that the Holy Spirit sees for anything. The Holy Spirit has no other purpose for anything in the world, and sex is no different than anything else. He continues, the pencil was not an end in itself, or sex is not an end in itself. It was an aid to the artist in his own creative endeavors, or in our case in the world, it's an aid in our endeavor to heal our mind, or to accept the atonement for ourselves. As he made new homes for souls and guided them through the period of their own developmental readiness, he learned the role of the Father himself. The whole process was set up as a learning experience in gaining grace. The pleasure which is derived from sex, as such, is reliable only because it stems from an error which men shared. Awareness of the error produces guilt. Denial of the error results in projection. Correction of the error brings release. And again, the error that we're talking about really is the belief in separation. But whenever you are believing that you can get happiness, fulfillment, satisfaction from something outside of you, you are believing in separation. So that is the error that needs to be corrected. And the way the error is corrected, the language that Jesus is using here, is learning to do God's will. The language that I tend to use is learning to follow my own internal guidance, learning to listen to only one voice, the Holy Spirit's voice. As we really turn our attention inward and we learn to follow that voice and trust that voice, that is the correction that brings release. And that voice will guide us to do different things depending on who we are. So what that really means is there isn't a bottom line answer to the question about sex, because the situations and form are different for different people. So when we get past this point of, you know, really desiring sex for satisfaction, you know, we're to the point now where we're really focused inward, and all we want to do is God's will, which means all we want to do is follow the inner guidance from the Holy Spirit. Whether we are guided to sex or not may literally vary. It may literally vary. There may be people who are indeed guided to remain celibate. There may be people who are guided into sexual relationships, and in fact may already be in a relationship with someone and the sex continues, but they're guided to look at the sex in a different way, to no longer look at the sex as a receiving of satisfaction, fulfillment, but just as a giving to someone else in a way that they understand. So, you know, we can't make a black and white rule for anyone about whether they should or should not have sex. The black and white rule, there is a black and white rule. The black and white rule is that we need to learn to listen within and follow our guidance and trust our guidance, look within for our own satisfaction, fulfillment, happiness, and love, and not look outside of us. That's the black and white rule. The form may vary, and it's certainly not up to us to judge anyone else's form. It's only up to us to look within and to follow the Holy Spirit and the guidance of the Holy Spirit. Now, here comes the sentence where he says, the only valid use of sex is procreation. And again, I've heard this sentence quoted a lot because, you know, people feel that if they're having sex for other reasons, that they must then be breaking this rule, the way this rule seems to be written down. The only valid use of sex is procreation. It is not truly pleasurable in itself. Lead us not into temptation means, do not let us deceive ourselves into believing that we can relate in peace to God or our brothers with anything external. Now, when Jesus says the only valid use of sex is procreation, we really need to understand that what Jesus is talking about in this case is a truly healed mind perspective. And but that truly healed mind perspective, where the mind is healed in a whole way. It's not that one partner is healed and the other partner is not, because that would not be a whole way yet. The mind is completely healed. There is not a body that is not healed. Okay, so the healed mind perspective. If every individual has a healed mind, no one is going to be looking outside of them for pleasure anymore. So I would not be in a situation in a healed mind where I am married to someone who wants sex and still believes that sex is an expression of my love for them, because they also have a healed mind and they wouldn't be looking outside of them for love, satisfaction, you know, either. So the only valid use of sex in that case is procreation. That would be the only valid use of sex from the healed mind perspective. That's a completely different statement than saying, you know, those of you in the world now really shouldn't have sex, you know, as a black and white rule. Because again, we're in situations where the mind is not healed. My mind is not healed completely. My partner has not even begun to attempt to heal his mind. And so what I need to do in my personal situation is literally follow my internal guidance. Again, that's the only black and white rule. And I don't want to misinterpret this sentence. The only valid use of sex is procreation, by believing that if I am in a situation that sex should never ever happen. Now, someone is asking, isn't there only one mind? That's a question I'm going to come back to. I'm going to come back to that, but I don't want to, that's a whole nother topic. Oh, that's Larry. That's a whole nother topic, Larry, and I don't want to stop in the middle of the sex discussion to get to the only one mind discussion, so I'm going to come back to that one, okay? So, the only valid use of sex is procreation. It is not truly pleasurable in itself. Lead us not into temptation means, and again, if we look at this next sentence, we'll see this is the meat of the entire discussion. Do not let us deceive ourselves into believing that we can relate in peace to God or our brothers with anything external. That's really the moral of, again, this sex discussion. And again, it could be sex, it could be anything else that we're looking outside of ourselves for. Now, I don't know the sin of Onan, so I'm going to have to skip that paragraph, because apparently Helen understood the sin of Onan, and so this meant something to her. It means nothing to me. So I'm going to skip to the next paragraph where Jesus says, to repeat an earlier instruction, the concept of either the self or another as a sex object epitomizes this strange reversal. As Bill put it, and very correctly too, it is objectionable, but only because it is invalid. Notice again, if you look at just part of that sentence, it is objectionable. You may see that Jesus is teaching judgment. But if you continue to read, he says, but only because it's invalid. In other words, he's not teaching sin or wrongness or judgment. He's just telling us over and over and over again that if you continue to look at it this way, if you continue to think of it this way, you're teaching yourself wrongly. You're teaching yourself that you are what you are not. And of course, that is not what Jesus wants to teach us. So he's going to continually turn the mind to look back in the other direction so that we are not looking outside of us for, you know, happiness, pleasure, love, fulfillment. So as Bill put it, and very correctly too, it is objectionable, but only because it is invalid. Upside down logic produces this kind of thinking. And then he says, child of God, you were created to create the good, the beautiful, and the holy. Do not lose sight of this. You were right in telling Bill to invite me to enter anywhere temptation arises. I will change the situation from one of inappropriate sexual attraction to one of impersonal miracle working. And again, if you read this with the right mind, what you'll really see is that he is saying, leave all situations to me. He's saying, don't make these decisions on your own. He's not teaching judgment. He's not giving us a set of criteria and saying, in this situation, here's the right thing to do. In this situation, here's the right thing to do. And in this situation, here's the right thing to do. He's not giving us any criteria. He's not giving us any rules. Because if we have criteria and we have rules, our ego is going to try to judge for itself and make the decision. And when our ego tries to judge for itself and make the decision, we are holding on to the belief in an independent thinking mind, which is holding on to the belief in separation. So Jesus is not going to give us this criteria. What he is saying is that wherever there is some kind of temptation or wherever there is some kind of question within the mind, turn it over to me. Turn it over to me, and I will lead you from inappropriate sexual attraction, which again, remember, inappropriate is looking outside of yourself for some kind of happiness, pleasure, fulfillment. I'll turn it from that inappropriate use of sexual attraction into one of impersonal miracle working. And that's all he's saying. Turn it over to me and follow my guidance. That's what he's saying here. Let's go to the next paragraph. The love of God for a little while must still be expressed through one body to another. That is because the real vision is still so dim. Everyone can use his body best by enlarging man's perception so he can see the real vision. This vision is invisible to the physical eye. The ultimate purpose of the body is to render itself unnecessary. Learning to do this is the only real reason for its creation. So there I think he is very, very clear that there is going to be body-to-body contact in this world, whether it's talking to each other the way we're doing now, or whether it might be some kind of a romantic sexual relationship, and that love is going to be expressed through this body-to-body contact, which seems to mirror separation. However, he says that's only for now, because the mind has not yet learned the vision that is invisible to the physical eye. And so that it doesn't pay attention to that vision. It doesn't see that vision. It doesn't believe in that vision. So love will seem to be expressed in a body-to-body way for a time. But if we are following internal guidance and allowing the Holy Spirit to guide us in our body-to-body contact in everything, allowing it to guide us in everything, the guidance is always going to be to lead us to that vision so that, again, the body itself is really rendered unnecessary. So really, all guidance, the purpose of all guidance is to lead us out of the world. And again, this is no different. We some reason break sex out is different, but it is no different. Yes, Christian, what do you got? Okay. Okay, I see one comment from Christian. She said, if one such union... Oh, here we go. Here we go. This is the one she wanted. It's just occurring to me that reaching creation does not necessarily imply avoiding the special love relationship. Rather, it could be the very way to reach it. But the perception of it must be reversed 360 degrees by the Holy Spirit. This occurs in ways we cannot even understand or visualize. But we can just trust that the Holy Spirit takes us forward in the future. This is more hopeful for us, doesn't split us in two. Thank you, Christian. Okay, so again, this vision is invisible to the physical eye. The ultimate purpose of the body is to render itself unnecessary. Learning to do this is the only real reason for its creation. So again, just like sex was created to help us accept the atonement, the body was created to help us accept the atonement, time was created to help us accept the atonement. I mean, you know, you look at the Holy Spirit and ask it about anything within the world, within our experience, and the only purpose the Holy Spirit is going to give you for it is it's there to help you accept the atonement, because that's the only purpose that the Holy Spirit sees in the world. You know, there's a little bit of, again, it gets a little bit kind of clumsy here, because Helen writes a message. She says, if you will tell me what to do, and she meant to say, I will do it, and instead she wrote, I will to do it. She thought she did that on accident. But then Jesus says, this is why you experienced that revelation about I will to do very personally. Because when Helen saw that she wrote that, she it really meant something to her. It had an impact on her. He says, he goes on to tell her that what she wrote can be useful to other miracle workers as well. And then he says, we said before that prayer is the medium of miracles. The miracle prayer is what you wrote. So what you thought you accidentally wrote, that's the miracle prayer. And it is this. Are you ready? Here's the miracle prayer. If you will tell me what to do, I will to do it. That's the miracle prayer. And again, that sums up everything that we've been talking about. It's really saying, I will make no decisions on my own. I will make no decisions on my own. I turn it over to you, Holy Spirit or Jesus, however you perceive it. And yes, if you will tell me what to do, I will to do it. If you will tell me what to do, I will to do it. And that's really the bottom line. I mean, full surrender to the Holy Spirit is the only way to let go of the ego. It's the only way to wake up. But we have to make sure that we're letting go of our own judgment. And there's so much spiritual judgment where we read things in the Course, or we read things in the Bible, or, you know, maybe people even be reading things in NTI, interpreting it, and then making decisions as to what to do in form. That's not the same thing as surrender. Interpreting things on an intellectual level, adopting it as a rule, and then making my decisions based on that spiritual rule is not the same thing as surrender. That is still individual judgment. That is still utilizing the ego. So what we really need to learn to do is to let go of individual judgment and surrender to the Holy Spirit. So if you ask me if you should be having sex or not, I can't answer that question for you. Sometimes I can be helpful if you give me a lot of details. Like if you call me up and you tell me that all you can think about is sex, then I might say, well, then find a willing partner and have sex. But that's only because right then you aren't ready for your own guidance and it looks like you have something you have to move through. But I cannot give anybody any real advice on what to do except get in touch with your inner guide and follow that guidance. And you're going to get in touch with your inner guide by letting go of all of that stuff that's in the way so that you can't hear the inner guide. So if there's a lot of guilt in your mind about sex, maybe you need to spend some time letting go of some guilt. You know, if there's a lot of anger, you need to spend some time letting go of some anger. You know, whatever you need to do to get all the clutter out of the way. And when you get the clutter out of the way, you'll be able to hear and follow your own guidance. And in fact, I brought something from NTI that I thought really summed this up well. This is from NTI 1 John chapter 2. It says, illusion can be recognized in your heart. And what that means is you still want the illusion. Okay, so you can recognize that you still want the illusion, is what this is saying. Illusion can be recognized in your heart by the priorities you place on all that you see. If anything in the world has more priority than another thing, you are desiring within the world, and you have asked to experience illusion. If all things within the world have the same priority, and only your relationship with me stands apart in your mind, you are letting go of illusion, and the clouds of darkness are passing. So if I am still looking, and sex has a different priority for me than other things, I either feel more guilty about the idea of having it, I feel more aversion to it, it seems more spiritual to me to avoid sex. I want it more than other things. It's all I think about. If in any way, it doesn't matter what the way is, if in any way sex still stands apart from everything else, I'm still believing in illusions. But when everything is the same, and all I want to do is follow the Holy Spirit's guidance, that's when I'm letting go of illusion. When everything is the same, I hold nothing apart as different, and all I want is to follow the Holy Spirit's guidance, and I trust that the Holy Spirit's guidance is what's best, that's when I'm letting go of illusion. And whether that guidance would lead me to have sex or would not to have sex would be completely dependent on all of the circumstances regarding me and the other person and what the Holy Spirit knows is best. Okay, let's see. ACIM, listen. I think I was told that's Larry. We could go very far with this topic. What about commitments we have already made as far as a partner? My answer from this point forward is going to be the same. I will give you no other answer. We need to find our inner guidance. There's a likelihood that the Holy Spirit may lead you to continue to have sex with that person. There is also a likelihood that the Holy Spirit may lead you not to. But what's really important is finding our own guidance. And if that's what you really want, if what you want above all else is just to know the guidance, you will find it. If you want something else, well then, you know, you probably won't hear the guidance. If you want to make the decision yourself, then that's what you're going to hear. But when you get to that point in your mind where it doesn't matter to you, you're willing to have sex, you're willing not to have sex, all you want is the Holy Spirit's guidance. When you get to that point in your mind, in a very sincere way, you will know your guidance. That's a promise. The Holy Spirit never withholds guidance from you when you truly want it. If we don't hear guidance, it's because we're making the decision ourselves. We've already made a judgment about what's best for us or what's right to do. So we want to let go of our judgments. We want to see that sex is no different than anything else. And above all else, we only want to do God's will, or we only want to hear the Holy Spirit's guidance. And then each and every one of us will be guided. So I'm going to stop and see if there's anything else about sex. If not, we'll talk about, is there only one mind or are there 6 billion? Okay, enough sex. Enough with the sex, Dorothy says. And Larry says, above all else, I want to see. Yes, and if it's above all else, I want to have sex, well, then go ahead. All right, next topic. Larry asked, I commented that, you know, if you know, one person's mind is healed, but another person's mind is not healed, it may not be the perception within the wholeness of the couple that the only valid reason to have sex is procreation, because one person within the couple may still believe, if you aren't having sex with me, you don't love me. And the question came up when I was saying that, isn't there only one mind? There is only one mind, no doubt about that. But what is happening within the one mind right now is that a shift is occurring. And this is no different than within what I'm going to call your brain right now, so we can separate the word mind and brain. If we take this down to what seems to be the individual level, there is a shift occurring within your brain right now. And what that means is sometimes you know that you are very, very clear in a right-minded way and everything is clear as day and you're happy and you're joyous and you're peaceful and it's great. But also, assuming you continue to have a split mind, there are moments when that is not true. There are moments when what was clear becomes muddled. There are moments when the peace is lost with agitation, upset, guilt. You can be in either place because both are in, I'm going to say, your brain, in order to, again, to distinguish between the seeming individual and the one mind. Both are there, so you can be in either place. That's no different within the one mind right now, okay, that includes all of us. There is a shift occurring within the one mind so that both the right mind and the wrong mind are within the one mind. The way that can play out in form is that in form it may look like some people are more right-minded and some people are more wrong-minded. That is merely the appearance and the reflection of the state of our one mind. Our one mind is shifting to awakening. And in fact, in the Holy Spirit's interpretation of Ephesians, what it really says is, make a decision about where you want to be in this shift and then stand there. So what he's saying is, you know, the entire mind is shifting, and that's why it looks like individuals are in different places. Your job, since your role is to accept the atonement for yourself, is to decide where do you want to be. And if you want to be standing with the one mind in its shift to right-mindedness, then you need to make that decision and you need to do your very, very best to come from the right mind and to let the wrong mind go. Yeah, Larry is saying, but hasn't the shift already happened? The world was over a long time ago. Those are symbols that A Course in Miracles uses. A Course in Miracles also teaches that now is all that exists. For me, it's much better to stay with the now. You know, it doesn't do me any good to say, well, the shift already happened and you're full of shit. You know, that doesn't do me any good. Well, this separation was over a long time ago and you are such a jerk. You know, what good is that? It's much better for me to focus on the now. Where am I now? Where am I deciding to be within the shift now? Where is my mind now? And, you know, that's the only way for me to understand it. So that's the only way for me to teach it. And it's also the only way that it's taught in NTI. So I think the symbols that work for, you know, one seeming individual mind will differ from the symbols that work for another seeming individual mind. And that's why symbols change from one seeming spiritual path to another seeming spiritual path. But notice I keep using the word seeming, because the truth is the purpose of all spiritual paths are the same and they are all pointing us in the same direction. They just meet us where we're at. And for me, focusing on the now and making a decision about where I want to hold my mind now is much more useful. So I really don't give thought to statements such as the world was over a long time ago. That isn't helpful to me. If that statement is helpful to someone else, and it helps them to make right choices now, then I truly encourage them to use that statement. But for me, it's much better to just keep focusing on now. What thoughts are in my mind now that are right-minded thoughts that I want to echo? What thoughts are in my mind now that are wrong-minded thoughts that I want to let go of? Yeah, Dorothy is saying that it helps her to know that, so that's great because it takes the pressure off for her. And that's exactly why we have different symbols. That's exactly why. So it's helpful for her. For me, it's been a symbol that has never been helpful at all. And the truth is, there is something that is done. And the reason it's done is because it was never undone. And that is our oneness. Literally, the separation never occurred. The separation never occurred. So in that way, there isn't anything to be fixed. Nothing has ever been wrong. You know, it's like I was saying last week when I was teaching, even our experience of separation is delivered through our oneness. So the oneness is now. The oneness has always been. There has never been anything but oneness. But again, the question I need to ask is, what is my experience now? What am I experiencing now? And if it isn't the experience of peace, peace, perfect love, perfect joy, perfect acceptance, then there's something in my mind that needs to be let go. Because since that is all that exists, if I'm experiencing anything else, I'm making it up, and I can easily let it go. So hopefully that answered the question. And in that way, for me also, Dorothy, it is a done deal. It's a done deal because the separation never happened, and I do see that clearly. That's very easy for me to see, that it never, ever happened. All right, then it's 3:00, and we never even got to ReginaDawnAkers.com, but that's okay. We will be back next week. Yes, I did record this session, and I will post it on ReginaDawnAkers.com by sometime tomorrow. I have a very busy afternoon, but I'll get it up in the morning. And then tomorrow we'll start with April 11th. I love you all very much, and I am turning the mic over to Dove.